NBC News brings you now a recording of Adlai Stevenson's major policy speech on the Congo today before the United Nations Security Council. It's a policy speech that was interrupted by the worst demonstration in the history of the United Nations. We will bring you Mr. Stevenson's speech, which ran calmly for about the first 15 minutes before the violent fist-swinging interruption in the galleries. The interruption ran on until the Security Council chairman, Sir Patrick Dean of Britain, ordered a five-minute recess until the galleries could be cleared. Here now is Adlai Stevenson's speech before the United Nations Security Council, shortly before noon today, New York time. Here is the Security Council, the topic, the Congo crisis and American policy, the voice, Adlai Stevenson.
Mr. President, a few days ago, a new administration took office in the United States. This is the first occasion for the United States, under the leadership of President Kennedy, to speak formally in the Security Council on a question of substance. But first, let me thank you again, all of you both here and abroad, who have welcomed my arrival at this table so graciously and so hopefully. While I cannot fulfill your expectations of miracles to come, I can commit my country, my colleagues, and myself to a tireless effort to make the United Nations successful, to make this great experiment in international collaboration fulfill the dreams of its founders, that one day reason would rule and mankind would be liberated from the everlasting scourge of war. It seems to be my lot, Mr. President, to address you and my colleagues for the first time in a moment of grave crisis in the brief and tragic history of the Congo, and in a moment of equally grave crisis for the United Nations itself. I had hoped it would be otherwise. Within recent days, we have seen successively the withdrawal of two national units of the United Nations forces. The violent death of the former Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba. The reported recognition of the Gazenga regime in Stanleyville by the United Arab Republic. And a threat by the USSR to provide unilateral assistance outside the United Nations. What we decide here in the next few days may, we believe, determine or not whether the United Nations will be able in the future to carry on its essential task of preserving the peace and protecting small nations. This is a time for urgent and constructive action. In the midst of passions, it is a time when the Security Council must be calm. In the midst of efforts to destroy the United Nations action in the Congo, it is a time when we must persevere in the interest not only of the Congo, but of all of us, large and small. The choice, as always, is the choice of we, the members of the United Nations. Either we will follow a path toward a constructive and workable solution, or we will follow a path of negative recrimination and self-interest. As a new arrival, listening and talking to delegates, I have wondered sometimes in the past 10 days if everyone is actually thinking about the Congo, a new republic struggling to be born, or if the Congo has been obscured by passions and prejudices about the doctors, Kazabuhu, Lumumba, Gazenga, Shombo, and so forth. Opinion seems to be polarizing about them, not about the patient. So it is more important than ever to rally strong support to the United Nations in order to save the patient. For the past fortnight, my country has been consulting on a United Nations program to save the patient, both here and abroad. A program on which there might be agreement by a large majority of United Nations members. That effort in which so many of us have taken part must not be abandoned. Indeed, its urgency is only accentuated by the impact of subsequent events. As I said, Mr. President, I had hoped that my first formal remarks to the Security Council on the vexed problems of the Congo could be directed solely to constructive suggestions which would be helpful to the Congolese people in working out their own independence free of outside interference. Instead, I find myself compelled to comment not on constructive suggestions, but on a statement and a proposed resolution by the Soviet Union published in this morning's newspapers, which a resolution which is virtually a declaration of war on the United Nations and on the principle of international action on behalf of peace. Permit me to analyze what stripped of intemperate rhetoric this statement and this resolution propose. They propose the abandonment of the United Nations effort for peace in the Congo and a surrender of the United Nations to chaos and to civil war. But the statement and the resolution say many things which we are glad to see. Things which support positions that my country has always maintained. As to colonialism, my country fought colonialism in 1776, when, if I may say so, the ancestors of the authors of this statement in the newspapers and this resolution had scarcely stirred beneath their bondage. And we have fought it ever since. My countrymen died to end colonialism in the Philippines. And my countrymen have assisted the Philippine people to attain their present high destiny of complete independence. And my countrymen have died to end colonialism in Cuba, though some Cubans seem to have forgotten it. We rejoice, too, Mr. President, to hear the Soviets denounce political assassination with such vehemence. In this country, it has always been condemned. By whomever committed, whether by Congolese, by colonialists, or by communists, we condemn any violation of human rights, any death without due process of law, whether of African politician, Hungarian patriot, or Tibetan nationalist. The United States stands squarely for the rights of man, individual man, man himself, as against any tyranny, whether it be the tyranny of colonialism or the tyranny of dictatorship or the tyranny of the majority. We note that the Soviets demand that Belgian foreign military and paramilitary aid be withdrawn. We, the United States, insist that all foreign military aid from whatever source and to whatever end be removed from the Congo, and that no such aid be permitted to interfere with the free and independent working out by the Congolese people themselves of their own political destiny. We mean this and we intend to keep on meaning it. And we mean it with particular reference to the threat which we hope we misinterpret by the Soviet government, and I quote, "It is ready to render all possible assistance and support to a so-called Congolese government in Stanleyville, which has no legal status. The United States intends to use its utmost influence and within the framework of the United Nations to see to it that there is no outside interference from whatever source with the Congolese people's working out of their own independence." So, Mr. President, we rejoice that the Soviet Union shares the distaste of the United States for colonialism and joins with us in condemning political assassination and in condemning foreign interference in the Congo. I pass lightly over the Soviet government's petulant attack on the Secretary General and that great office. He needs no defense from me, nor does the institution. His record is an open book, a book which all peace-loving peoples recognize as the record of a dedicated international civil servant whose only loyalty is to international justice and international peace. Let the Soviet government, if it wishes, pretend that he does not exist. It will find that he is far from a disembodied ghost, and it will find that peace-loving states will continue to support his patient search for the right road to security and peace in the Congo and for all peoples. The United Nations may have made mistakes in the Congo, as who has not? But nothing justifies an intemperate and unjustifiable attack on the integrity of the office itself. We note that the United Nations has been denounced with equal vehemence by Kasavubu, by Gazenga, by Shombe, while they also attack each other with equal vehemence. But could there be better testimony of impartiality? And I recall, if you will permit me, that Christian scripture says, "Woe unto him when all men speak well of him." Neither the UN nor the US seems likely to suffer from the neither the United Nations nor the Secretary General seems likely to suffer from the affliction of universal approval. We regret, Mr. President, that the Soviet government does not as yet seem to have seen fit to cooperate with states who truly seek peace in attempting to work out constructive steps for the cooperative solution of the agonizing problems that the Congolese people are now facing. Instead, the Soviet government proposes the complete abandonment of the United Nations operation in the Congo in 1 month. What does this mean? It means, my colleagues, not only the abandonment of the Congo to chaos and the civil war, to, if you please, the Cold War, but it means abandonment of the principle of the United Nations itself. Does anyone doubt that the removal of the United Nations forces would mean chaos? Does this Council, the Security Council, favor abandoning security for insecurity and anarchy? Do we want to withdraw the only elements that stand four square against civil and tribal war? Does the Soviet government really want Africans to kill Africans? The United States does not, and it devoutly hopes that the Soviet government does not too, and that it will join the United States and other peace-loving states in supporting and strengthening the only force that can prevent Congolese civil war, the United Nations. And now the Cold War. Does the Soviet government really want to chill what should be warm and temperate in Africa with the icy blasts of power politics? The United States does not. Its only interest in the Congo is to support the Congolese people in their struggle for real independence, free from any foreign domination from any source. The United States deplores any war, cold or otherwise. Its only desire is to live in peace and freedom and to let all other peoples live in peace and freedom. It will resist with all of its power all assaults on its own peace and freedom. And it proposes to join with all other peace-loving peoples in resisting, in the cooperative framework of the United Nations, all assaults on the peace and freedom of other peoples. In that spirit, we declare that so far as we are concerned, Africa shall never be the scene of any war, cold or hot. But we also declare that Africa for the Africans means Africa for the Africans, and not Africa as a hunting ground for alien ambitions. And we pledge our full and unstinted support against any attempt by anyone to interfere with the full and free development by Africans of their own independent African future. We believe that the only way to keep the Cold War out of the Congo is to keep the United Nations in the Congo. And we call on the Soviet Union to join us in thus ensuring the free and untrammeled exercise by the Congolese people of their right to independence and to democracy. But, Mr. President, the position apparently taken by the Soviet government involves more than the unhappy and despicable fate of three Congolese politicians. It involves the future of the 14 million Congolese people. They are the ones with whom we are concerned. We deplore the past, and we condemn those responsible for it, no matter who they may be. But we submit that it is the future that is all important now, and that the best efforts of this Council should be concentrated on the future security of the Congo, and indeed on the future security of all peoples. For, Mr. President, it is the security of all peoples which is threatened by this statement and by the proposals of the Soviet government. Let me make my meaning abundantly and completely clear if I can. The United States government believes and proudly believes that the single best and only hope of the peoples of the world for peace and security lies in the United Nations. It lies in international cooperation, in the integrity of an international body rising above international rivalries into the clearer air of international morality and international justice. The United Nations has not achieved perfection, nor has the United States, and they probably never will. The United States, like the United Nations, is composed of humans. It has made mistakes. It probably always will make mistakes. It has never pleased all people. It cannot please all people. In its desire and wholehearted determination to do justice, it may offend one group of states in 1952, another in 1956, and perhaps still another in 1961. But always the United States has tried, and we believe it will always try, to apply even-handedly the rules of justice and equity that should govern us all. Are we callously to cast aside the one and only instrument that men have developed to safeguard their peace and security? Are we to abandon the jungles of the Congo to the jungles of internecine warfare and of international rivalry? This issue, Mr. President, even transcends the fate of the suffering 14 million Congolese people. It involves the fate of all of us, of all mankind. The issue then is simply this: shall the United Nations survive? Shall the attempt to bring about peace by the concerted power of international understanding be discarded?
You are now hearing a recording of the worst outbreak and demonstration in the history of the United Nations, which interrupted Mr. Stevenson's speech. This is a recording of this outbreak at the United Nations today, which occurred approximately 45 minutes ago, when a group of 10 Africans, two of them women, describing themselves as members of the National African Liberation Committee, burst in from the back of the galleries of the United Nations and started piling down the stairways. They tangled immediately with the United Nations guards, and three or four fistfights erupted in the gallery. Shocked tourists and others just sat there stunned as this turmoil went on. The Africans screamed in French, "Long live Lumumba." One of the Negro women struck a guard, and then as the fight poured down onto the front of the galleries, the guards began to hustle them outside of the Security Council area into the galleries on the third floor corridor. The fight even continued out there.
We'll be suspended for 5 minutes. On va replacer us for 5 minutes.
We just heard the voice of the UN Security Council chairman for this month, Sir Patrick Dean of Britain, who recessed in order that the guards would be able to clear the gallery and the procedure and policy speech continue of Adlai Stevenson. To recap, this interruption, which was the worst so far in the history of the United Nations, at least since it's had its new home here in the last few years, was caused by a group of 10 Africans who described themselves as members of the National African Liberation Committee. They burst in from the rear of the galleries, came down, started fistfighting with the United Nations security guards, interrupted Mr. Stevenson's speech, forcing Sir Patrick Dean to recess. It took about 7 or 8 minutes to clear these people out of the gallery and restore order. At that point, Mr. Stevenson then resumed his speech, one of the most important policy speeches of the new administration in regard to American policy on the Congo. Once again, here is Adlai Stevenson.
I call on those states to rise in defense of the integrity of the institution, which is for them the only assurance of their freedom and their liberty, and the only assurance for all of us of peace in the years to come. And I also call upon the Soviet Union to reconsider their position. My government is earnestly determined to cooperate with all governments in an attempt to improve international relationships and to further friendship among peoples. And it has welcomed evidences of cooperation toward that end by the Soviet government. Let those evidences be buttressed now by concrete steps by the Soviet government looking toward constructive solution of the difficult problems that confront us all. Let us join in condemning the past, but let us join in facing the future with calm determination to support steadfastly and strengthen sturdily the United Nations. The United Nations, which is the last, best hope of us all. Now let me turn to the Congo and to what can be done to arrest the sad deterioration in that divided country. There are certain fundamental principles concerning the Congo which have had and will continue to have this full support of the American people and of the United States government. It is on the basis of these principles that we have undertaken consultations this past fortnight. We believe that they are shared by others, and we are willing to work with any and all who show a willingness to find a solution. The essential principles of such a solution are, we believe, apparent to all. In the first place, that the unity, the territorial integrity, the political independence of the Congo must be preserved. I am sure Sir Patrick will not object if I repeat that the United States was one of the first anti-colonialists, and that during the 186 years since, we have stood steadfastly for the right of peoples to determine their own destiny. The United States desires nothing for the Congo but its complete freedom from outside domination, and nothing for its people but the same independent freedom which we wanted for ourselves so long ago and have resolutely defended ever since. Much as the United States was once beset by internal dissensions so the Congo, since its independence, has been beset by secessionist movements. Previously in the Katanga, and now in Oriental Province too. The United States supports the continued territorial integrity of the Congo. So far as we are concerned, its borders are identical with its borders on July 1st, 1960. The United States is ready to join with other states which support its independence and integrity to maintain this principle within the framework of the United Nations. Secondly, the Congo must not become a battleground, as I have said, either for a cold or a hot war among the big powers. When the United States was first requested to provide troops for the Congo, we told the Congolese government to appeal to the United Nations. We then supported United Nations military assistance to the Congo. In contrast, the United States has never at any time provided a single tank, a single gun, a single soldier, a single piece of equipment that could be used for military purposes to anyone in the Congo. We have, on the other hand, responded to every request made to us by the United Nations promptly and vigorously, so that the entire control over our assistance passed from our hands to those of the United Nations. We remained firmly determined, as I have said, to do everything in our power to keep the Cold War out of Africa. Third, we support the United Nations action in the Congo to the fullest measure of our power. The best way to keep the Cold War and the hot war out of the Congo, as I have said, is to keep the United Nations in. To those members who are still contemplating withdrawal, I suggest a long, hard, careful look at what might happen if the United Nations force collapses or if the United Nations mission fails because of lack of support from its members. Finally, we believe that the Congolese people must be allowed to develop their own political settlement by peaceful means, free from violence and external interference. The Congo's political problems must, in the last analysis, be worked out by the Congolese themselves. The United Nations can assist in this effort by helping create peace and stability and through extending its good offices, as it has done in the Conciliation Commission. But only a settlement commanding the support of the Congolese people will long endure. On these principles, the maintenance of territorial integrity and political independence, the isolation of the Congolese from big power and small power interference, continued vigorous United Nations assistance, and the settlement of internal political controversies by peaceful means, on these principles rest, in our opinion, the only possibility for a solution. We are faced now with the necessity for urgent and effective steps to bring these principles closer to reality. The threat of civil war, of increased unilateral intervention in the Congo on all sides, is increasingly grave. If the United Nations does not take effective action immediately, not only may conflict break forth in full fury in the Congo, but the hopes of African unity may be destroyed for many years to come by the divisions which will be produced among African nations. What then in these circumstances needs to be done? First, all foreign intervention outside the framework of the United Nations should cease immediately, and any foreign military or paramilitary personnel in the Congo should be withdrawn. The injunction of the General Assembly resolution, adopted with the support of all members of the United Nations except the Soviet bloc, against any unilateral military aid whatever, whether direct or indirect, should be adhered to fully by all United Nations members. This applies to those Belgians who are providing military advice and assistance to the Congo. It applies equally against military assistance to the forces in Oriental. The United States, for its part, does not intend to sit by if others consciously and deliberately seek to exacerbate the present situation. We are prepared to use all of our influence, if other members of the United Nations do likewise, to prevent such assistance from coming to the Congo, no matter from what quarter it comes. Equally urgent and immediate steps are needed to avert the extension of civil war in the Congo and to protect the lives of innocent civilians and refugees should the present passions result in widespread outbreaks of violence. United Nations political and military authorities on the ground should be consulted immediately, should consult immediately with the Chief of State and with other civilian and military leaders if necessary to agree on measures which would best maintain peace and stability and protect the lives of citizens. Such measures must be accompanied also by immediate steps to assure long-range stability and progress. The Secretary General proposed to us less than 2 weeks ago that measures should be taken to unify, reorganize, retrain the Congolese army and other armed forces in the Congo with a view to eliminating force as a political element in that afflicted country. The United States supports this proposal. We believe that negotiations to bring this about should be undertaken with the same urgency as the measures I have just mentioned. On Monday here, in the Security Council, I deplored the reported death of Mr. Lumumba and his colleagues and supported the Secretary General's request and his report on a preliminary investigation be included on the agenda. On every occasion when the arrest of Mr. Lumumba has been discussed in the United Nations, the United States has taken the position that he must be treated humanely and with all protection of law and order. We have similarly expressed ourselves through diplomatic channels to the appropriate authorities in the Congo. I believe it has been long known that in our consultations during the past week, we had advocated the release of all political prisoners and their participation in the political process once law and order had been restored to the Congo and the possibility of civil war averted. We continue to believe, Mr. President, that this must be done for those political prisoners such as Minister Songolo, about whom the world press has been less aware. In the case of Mr. Lumumba, we support the Secretary General's investigation, and we believe that it should be continued vigorously until the true facts are known. I earnestly hope that the Katanga forces will cooperate so that the full facts may be brought to light. The ultimate objective of such steps should be to promote the reconciliation of the political elements in the Congo and a full return to constitutional processes in a form to be designated by the people themselves. The government recently appointed by the Chief of State is a step in the right direction. Indeed, any step in the direction of moderation and breadth of base is a step in the right direction. The provision of unfilled cabinet places for other elements is encouraging. Determined future efforts must be made to broaden the base of the Congolese government, and Parliament should be convened as soon as conditions of security, law, and order permit. Encouragement by the United Nations of such steps is of fundamental importance, we believe. The measures which I have outlined can only be carried out with dispatch and with effectiveness through this Secretary General and the United Nations mission in the Congo. To attempt to discredit and dismiss the Secretary General at this critical moment would not only wreck the United Nations mission in the Congo, it would dangerously weaken the United Nations itself. This is the measure of the gravity of our crisis. And we call upon all members around this table to face soberly and solemnly these realities. We are eager to continue consultations with other nations at this table with a view to producing a draft resolution to carry out measures such as these. We are prepared to meet in the Council by night and by day until we can reach consensus and agreement. The occasion for, the time for effective action in the Congo is now. Mr. Chairman and gentlemen, we must seize it, and we must seize it quickly. Thank you, sir.
You have just heard a recording of Adlai Stevenson's historic Congo speech today before the United Nations Security Council. The council is still in session, and for a late report, we go now to Bill Ryan at the United Nations.
The council is now hearing the translation into French of Mr. Stevenson's remarks. It's a far more quiet room than it was approximately an hour ago when a violent demonstration, as you heard, broke out in the public galleries of the chamber. What we're waiting to hear now is whether Mr. Zorin, who is the next speaker, the delegate from the Soviet Union, will follow the translation and deliver his remarks on the Congo crisis, or whether the council chamber will break for lunch and come back later to hear what will be undoubtedly a blistering Soviet attack on the United Nations, its efforts in the Congo, and on Secretary General Dag Hammarskjöld himself. Bill Ryan, NBC News, United Nations.
This has been a special hotline report of the United Nations Security Council with a speech by Adlai Stevenson on American policy toward the Congo crisis. This is Stephen Flanders, NBC News, reporting.
A special hotline summary report on the United States Championship figure skating team killed in this morning's Belgium plane crash in 30 minutes over most of these same NBC stations.